Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets Live. My name is Paul Hill, and I'm delighted again to be able to speak to accomplished UK fund manager Gervais Williams after a few little technical niggles. So big welcome, Gervais.
Thank you very much. And it's a pleasure to be back, actually. And what an interesting time to be chatting, actually.
Absolutely fascinating. I mean, certainly on the macro level, since we last spoke, we've had the Iranian war, we've got higher elevated energy prices, potential bubbles as well in semiconductors and all things space related, and obviously masses of corporate news we're going to have to catch up on. But before we run through some stocks, just broadly, what's your sort of like your view on UK small and mid caps at the moment?
Well, I think in the last couple of years, I think I've, you know, when I've been on with you, and thank you for your support, effectively, I said that, you know, investors are going to start to have to diversify. They've got too much correlation into a fairly narrow range of very high tech stocks, you know, mega cap, Magnificent Seven, that kind of thing. And what's been interesting about the current year is actually most of those haven't really performed. So that's not really it's happening. Things have moved on. The caravan's moved on. But it's still very narrow. Since the Iranian war, well, conflict began anyway, effectively, you know, semiconductors are up 68% or something, so kind of crazy. So there's still this very narrow aspect. But what is interesting is until recently, actually, the UK stock market, FTSE 100, was outperforming S&P 500, you know, Mag 7, all that kind of stuff. Okay, they've had a bit of a run with the SOX index recently, but the bottom line is that actually diversification, equity, income, rather than, you know, high beta, it has been a factor which I think is going to drive returns. I think it's going to carry on going. I think UK will continue to outperform. What we haven't seen yet is the smaller end of the market moving very much. We've had, you know, moments when it's moved, but not really significant at the moment. So I think, again, I think globalization is all really about bigness and mega caps. And we've got the last of that still coming through. But beyond that, I think nationalism is all really about localism and smallness. And I think, you know, agility and all that kind of thing. And you know, not only are UK quoted companies cheap, UK small caps disgustingly cheap in many cases, but actually they've got the ability to run around the feet of the majors and make not just good returns, but disproportionate returns. So coming back to your question, I am overwhelmingly optimistic, not just that UK outperforms, but smaller end of the market starts to outperform and doesn't just make money, but makes disproportionate money relative to global markets, global indices and everything else. So, and we've already seen a little bit of that, but we've only just started and it's not really started yet.
Yeah, well, I'm certainly cheering that view because most of my portfolio is in UK small and mid caps because I'm totally on board with the valuation metrics. And we do have plenty of companies which have also got really strong USPs and uniqueness in their business models. Let's move to some stocks. And I think probably one of your large, I know you've talked about it quite before. Let's give an update. It's U Group, which is a B2B energy supplier. I mean, basically, they have done fabulously over about 3 years. What's your sort of your latest on this one?
Yeah, I mean, actually, it's interesting you say they've done fine over 3 years in terms of P&L and things, they've done fine. But really, the share price has actually stagnated, really, for a while. And let's just remind ourselves, it's a utility. And nearly all utilities are actually geared enormously. And they take an awful lot of debt on and then obviously win some customers and pay off the debt and all the rest of it. This is the exact opposite. It's a company which has grown very fast organically. You know, sales were only just over 100 million back in 2020, you know, and we're seeing very considerable growth. You know, they're forecasting now sales to be 1.5 billion in a couple of years' time. Extraordinary. That's all organic. There's a tiny bit of acquisition, but nearly all organic. But more importantly, this is a company which is very cash, you know, it's rich. It's got net cash in the balance sheet. It is going to be taking on some slightly bigger customers. They do involve a little bit of extra working capital because, you know, they don't pay quite so quickly. So the working capital will come out of the cash balances. But more importantly, you know, this is a company which has grown its market share. You know, it's already at 3.5% at the end of last year. Yeah, they're now targeting 7 or 9% market share. If they achieve anything like their targets, even half their targets, but if they achieve their targets, you know, this is a company which has not just the opportunity to outperform, but opportunity to generate extraordinary surplus cash. And now with energy prices going up, you've got a sort of tailwind as they had a couple of years ago. It's already yielding 4.1%, you know, just to keep you happy. So, you know, sure, it's spent a couple of years waiting, not a problem. It's actually risen faster than Nvidia since the last 6 years, for example. And it's still, in my view, disgustingly cheap. Extraordinary, really.
Yeah, I don't think you can be can't complain too much. Over 3 years, it's eightfolded, so or eight bagged, which is absolutely fabulous. So that's really good. Yeah, I mean, I'll just look at the mid. Yeah, it's a PE of about 8 and about 7 on go forward in terms of looking the you know as a PE. What's the sort of the USPs of that business against the big sort of like you know the energy suppliers?
Yeah, the main thing is it's digital by default. So it's just a straight through processing. In other words, many of the majors, you know, they've got old systems and they've put different systems together and all the rest of it. And that all leads to kind of inefficiency. And the whole point about U Group is it's just extraordinary efficiency. So you can, you know, if you need to find out what the price of your electricity, if you want to buy a new contract, then basically you can just press a button and within a few minutes or certainly an hour or two, you can get all of your, you know, your electricity usage sort of priced up for a year or 3 years, whatever the contract is. The other feature is that it's actually very expensive to hedge because once you, you know, you've got a 1 year or 3 year contract, you've got to make sure you hedge that energy so that the price isn't different from what you thought when you took it on. And the great advantage they have is that Shell, who wants to supply that energy, the gas, the electricity, actually love the supply, but they do the hedging for U Group on top of that. So they don't use their own balance sheet, which is why they've got this 100 million of cash, which they can now draw down to take on more customers. So coming back, it's customer service, it's digital by default. And most particularly, it's a marketplace where some of the competitors are not as efficient as you might expect.
Yeah. And in terms of the higher or elevated oil price, are they going to be okay for that, for the power? Because obviously prices of oil and gas have increased.
Yeah, if you look back to the, you know, the sort of 22 period when there was the Ukrainian invasion, effectively that led to energy prices obviously spiking enormously and hedging and all the rest of it was difficult. But most particularly, a lot of people wanted to lock in prices because they just wanted to say, right, I'm just going to put this price in and I've got it for next year or next 3 years. So you saw actually the unit cost of those deals being much larger. And that's a tailwind for them. So I think we'll have the same kind of pattern again. If energy price remains elevated. So I think that's going to be a tailwind to the current forecast if that continues.
Brilliant. Okay, well, let's stay in the energy sector. Let's move to Europa Oil and Gas, which I think is a developer or an explorer of sort of oil and gas fields, one off the West Island offshore and also off the west coast of Africa in Equatorial Guinea. Yeah. What sort of caught your eye here?
So the whole point is, I mean, you know, we've been involved in this since prior to the Iranian conflict. But most particularly, it's a tiny company. It's 19 million market cap. It's got no cash and stuff. Specifically, you know, share price moves around a bit with some of the UK wells. The Irish acreage could be interesting, but it's very long term. The real driver for us is the Equatorial Guinea Barracuda well. They farmed it out. They brought in a company called Fuhai Energy. Now, just remind ourselves, it is a Chinese company, but it's 12 billion in turnover. So this is not a trivial company. It does millions of tons every year in crude oil processing. And actually, and if you can get the crude at the moment, because there's a shortage of processing capacity, being that a lot of it's stuck in the Gulf and can't produce at the moment, they should be making a lot of money. So Fuhai are interested in getting certainty of supply from the new well in Equatorial Guinea. They're happy to pay up to 95% of the cost, up to $53 million, to take a 40% interest in that well. The Europa interest after dilution is about 17%. But the key, the reason why we're involved, is that many of these wells, you know, they might have a two or three, you know, out of 10 chance of success. This is a 8 out of 10 chance of success. Right? So 4 times out of 5, this well is going to come in, you know, at the P50 level or somewhere around that. Now, if that happens, this company, 19 million market cap, is going to be worth multiples of its current market cap.
Right.
Even if it comes in at P10, i.e. the only 10% of what might be in there, the share price still goes up a long way. So from that point of view, actually, we think the risk-reward ratio is just perfect. Clearly, with the energy background and energy prices being much more higher than originally assumed, and if they stay higher for longer and all the rest of it, then, you know, obviously the P-value will be even higher. But let's not worry about that. The bottom line is, later this year, they will commit to a rig. The drilling will be done, and at that stage, we'll find out. And as I say, the risk-reward ratio looked unusually attractive in this case.
Great idea. Well, I'll have a good look at that myself. Let's stay in the sort of like the resources sector. Let's go to a company we've never chatted about. So tip the hat to you here, Gervais. Tungsten West. I didn't even know we had tungsten and tin mines in the UK. Never mind in the beautiful scenery of Devon. What sort of attracted you to this one?
Well, I mean, what's interesting about this one, I think, is that it's a company which, you know, it's been around for a while. New management team came in about 18 months ago, 2 years ago. It closed down when tungsten price was low. What we've seen in tungsten price terms is a real enormous run up in the market price of tungsten. And that means, of course, that this mine, which was marginally kind of good and bad at different times, suddenly becomes immensely profitable. So this is a company which has, you know, got all the ore body there. It's one of the largest ore bodies in the world. When it comes into production, and that will be next year, but the early production in terms of cash flow this year, but most particularly, you know, it will be one of the lowest cost tungsten mines in the world. And as you say, it's in Devon. It's in Devon. Would you believe it? Nice. Anyway, main thing is they needed to raise 45 million. They need 85 million debt funding on top, which is just being organized at the moment. But most particularly, this company, at the start of this year, I know the share price, you know, you've got the share price there. But at the start of this year, the market cap was 20 million. 20 million, right? It's raised 45 million. There's been some B shares which have been converted and such like. So actually, the market cap now is 400 million, right? And if you go on their website, they say in February, the net present value of their mine, when it gets into production, you know, with its 40-year life and things, is 1.7 billion, right? That's dollars rather than pounds. But even so, bottom line, right, is this was 20 million at the beginning of this year. What? This is, you know, this is the nature of where we are. Some companies are literally too cheap for most active fund managers to research. And right. Just do the work. Just occasionally you find companies like this. Now, clearly, you know, we were, you know, as soon as we saw it, we thought, right, this, you know, we offered them capital straight away. We said, you know, this was in January before the Iranian conflict. And we said, you know, we don't know what Trump's going to do, but just take some cash from us straight away, because you just have the cash, you can pay your advisors, it takes a bit longer, etc., doesn't matter. And of course, then they got other supporters very quickly. They did raise some money in February at not 12p, which is where they were at the beginning of the year, but 18p. It was 20 times oversubscribed. Extraordinary.
Me.
So anyway, coming back to it, yes. Yeah. I mean, mining companies have the advantage that when they come right, they come very, very right. In most cases, it takes, you know, 5 years, 10 years sometimes to bring a new mine in production. This is a revival of an old mine. But even so, You know, it still takes quite a lot of years to come into production. So if the tungsten, if there is a tungsten shortage going forward, you know, because the Chinese supply isn't coming through as it was, then and then mines like this could make literally hundreds of millions. Extraordinary. Yeah. And that's in the UK.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Critical metals, and with tungsten being very used in defence and aerospace, then yeah, it makes absolute sense in the UK making sure that one is a big success. Okay, let's move to life sciences. Let's go to NIOX, which I think is the world leader in asthma and COPD sort of diagnostic, particularly on the sort of asthma side. It's been in a sort of turnaround. I think it was years ago it was called Cicasia, but anyway, it's gone to NIOX, and they've done really well. They did actually have a bid, I believe, at about, it was somewhere right. in the ATP, wasn't it, last year? Anyway, how do you see this one? What's your latest views on NIOX?
First of all, I'm delighted the bid was turned down, and I'm delighted they turned it off. The whole point about people bidding for many of these small companies is they can see five times upside, and they're happy to give us 50% now. No. I don't want 50% now. I want five times over the next few years, please. Now, obviously, NIOX may or may not deliver that, but the point about these pheno machines is that actually, I think they, in technological terms, I think they are effectively one of the leaders. They're very good at not just diagnosis, but actually identifying people who aren't asthmatic and are possibly taking asthmatic medicines when they don't need it, and that can cause side effects and all the rest of it. So it can actually save money for the health service by actually stopping people taking the wrong medicine. It can help you identify if you need it. It's kind of market penetration is still tiny. I mean, it's sub 5% in most markets. Japan's a little bit larger. You know, I think it could become very, very substantial, one of the market leaders in the sector. It's only got sales of 50 million. It's already generating 12 million of profit. It's got net cash, which is obviously a lovely thing. It's paying a good and growing dividend. You get a 2 or 3% yield to start with. But most particularly, if you look at some of the notes like the, you know, the Pamir Liberum note, they think this, the sales could scale between 4 and 10 times. Now, you know, they're assuming 4. Maybe it won't be 10 times. But I think the opportunity for this machine isn't just, you know, rolling out to the current customers, not just in the hospital sector, but actually in due course they hope to issue a home-based machine which will be helping asthmatics at home. And I think that's going to be immensely popular. You know, home-based medicine is a really big growth area. I think NIOX technically is an absolute market leader to come, and specifically I think that it's got all the right ingredients for that growth to come through. Whether it comes through a little quicker or a little slower, it really doesn't matter as far as I'm concerned. You know, it's got that market position. It's already done all the technical things it needs to do. So it's just a case of rolling it out.
Yeah, and I think there's also that COPD opportunity, isn't it? Because they've been doing quite a lot of research for companies on new treatments for COPD. And if they ever get a treatment in basically for patients, then they need testing continuously, not only on the research, but go forward as well. So that could equally be almost as big as the asthma market, because obviously COPD is smoking related.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is. Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. Yeah, no, that's all on top. But as I said, I think just on the core asthma product, I was speaking to a friend of mine whose son works in this industry. You know, he's moving to become a consultant in the area, and I mentioned NIOX. He knew all about it. Right, he knew every detail about it. And you thought that's good. They've already got that penetration already in terms of knowledge.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, let's move. Stay in the same sector. We've got Bioventix, which I think does sheep monoclonal antibodies to help diagnostic companies. They supply the sort of the reagents and also some of the clever science basically that allows you to diagnose people with things like vitamin D deficiency. And I think they're moving into Alzheimer's, their next big growth area. The shares have sort of like come off a bit over the last couple of years, but have just perked up of late. How do you see it?
So, you know, we love the company. We went up a long way. We took a lot of profits. It was, you know, we've still been involved, but we've had a smaller position. But we bought back in more recently. The whole point about the company is that actually many of its core antibody products, and you're talking about the vitamin D and there are others, you know, just generates good cash flow. Just remind our company, remind ourselves, the company still yields 8.8%, right? You know, very, very nice, just as a kind of, you know, just keep you in cash. But more importantly, it's got cash on the balance sheet. Market cap's quite small, only about 90 million. But specifically, the disappointment has been that troponin, which is a sort of heart attack monitor and helps, you know, medical rooms, in emergency rooms and such like, to actually identify heart attacks earlier. they're distributing the product through Siemens, like many of the other products, and it just hasn't rolled out as fast as you might have thought. Not a problem. It'll roll out next year or the year after, right? We're not even slightly bothered by that. We think troponin is an outstanding product, so that's still very much in place. But as you mentioned, they've got new products coming through. So there's they keep bringing novel products. They've got something called Tau and Neuro, which is an Alzheimer indicator. It's very much used in research at the moment. But if we do get to a stage where there are some products which are being sold to slow Alzheimer's or possibly even stop Alzheimer's, wouldn't that be wonderful if it ever happened? Then effectively, it's likely, in our view, that the tau indicator would be a key part of that. You know, they would use the tau indicator to diagnose whether you've got Alzheimer's and how developed you were and whether the drug was working. And on top of that, alongside that, they've got a couple of other products. They've got a novel product for pollution detecting in rivers and such like. And clearly, we're all doing that as well. So anyway, the bottom line is, right, the company continues to generate cash. It continues to pay a great yield. We've got the, you know, troponin, which is due to roll out and continue to come through in due course. And then we've got these uncertainties about these novel products, right? All wrapped up in a market cap where the share price is only 90 million and it's already yielding 9% and got cash in the balance sheet. You know, the risk reward ratio, again, this isn't, you know, we don't have to make assumptions about what's going to happen in the Iran war or UK GDP growth. This is, you know, many of the companies we've got in the portfolio are able to look after themselves irrespective. If we do get into, you know, inflationary spiral and interest rates going up and sterling going through the floor and a change of government, all the other guff, right? Of course, it'll affect, you know, share prices in the very short term. But companies like this, which are very strong and technically leading in their market positions, we believe will actually come through. And, the weak will get wiped out. Many zombies perhaps go bust. But more importantly, the strong will get stronger. And that's what we're looking for, really, for many of these things.
Yeah. And I think there's some important phase three results coming out from Roche and from, I think it's Bristol Myers in the States, about Alzheimer's treatments. And if that gets approved, which they've done very well in phase two, if they actually get approved, then you're right. I mean, that's game on for the Alzheimer's diagnostic. So you may not have to wait that long there, Gervais. This time next year, we could be seeing some good testing volume. Anyway, let's move to a much smaller one in life sciences or med tech. We've got MedPal AI, which I think it IPO'd probably about 6 to 12 months ago. It's a vertically integrated, vertically integrated online pharmacy, and has also got a healthcare sort of app associated with it. It's done quite a lot of sort of acquisitions and putting this business together. How do you see this one?
So, I mean, the key here is that, you know, the chief executive, Jason Drummond, was involved in the startup of FairFX, you know, became Equals, all the rest of it. So he's a techie chap, and he's, you know, he did very well in that company and the technology they put together. And he identified, and I agree with him about this, that high street pharmacies are really struggling a bit in terms of, you know, keeping up with the volume of medicines and all the requirements, and if anything, quite a few, unfortunately, because they're run by life, you know, people who've been there, their life's work has been in these pharmacies, that many of them are retiring and closing down. So the high street pharmacies closing down, Tesco's and such like are using less pharmacies in their stores. So there's a real need, not just to supply medicines, but actually if you try booking a GP, it's a bloody nightmare. So coming back to it, having this app-based health system, it doesn't just monitor it. It's beyond wellness. It's very much about fitness and nutrition. But if you have problems, which you say, oh, hang on a minute, I need to speak to someone, they've got this health triage system, which helps you diagnose what product you may need. You can get access to a real GP. So you know, if halfway through the day, if you're not feeling well, you put your stuff into the app or into the on the triage system. They say, no, you may have this, whatever it is. You may need a product. You can go online, see a GP very quickly that day. And as soon as you've seen the GP, if you need some kind of product, you know, some kind of prescription, then that will be delivered to you directly for mail next morning. You don't have to wait to try and get a GP at 8 o'clock next morning and then find that you go to the pharmacy and they haven't got the right product. So coming back to it, it's a new market. It could be a very rapidly growing market. You know, they did come to market recently. We've actually put some capital in the recent placing they had. They've made a couple of acquisitions, Universal Pharmacy, Remedy. These are effectively online businesses for supplying prescriptions. It's already reaching 10 million of turnover in some of this acquisition, 17 million market cap beyond break even, they say. So the net effect is now how quickly it's going to roll out. We're pretty excited about it.
Yeah. What's the USPs against people like, I don't know, Lloyd's Direct, Lloyd's Pharmacy Direct, and there'll be Super Drug Online, and I'm sure there's a there'll be another one, basically, Boots Online or something.
Yeah, it's really about the way that they've integrated with their app and triage the ability to diagnose illness. So you know, nearly all of them do offer you opportunity to meet a GP in due course. But in the case of MedPal, by kind of you putting in your symptoms, you get to the finishing post quite quickly, and then you can then just, you know, see a real GP just to kind of make quite sure you're happy with the diagnosis. But it's so much quicker. So it's the techie lead. Alongside that, of course, you know that they bought acquisitions of existing prescription online delivery prescription supply businesses. So that gives them the scale now. So it's with those contracts and with the new app, as you mix them together, as pharmacies move away and people find it a nightmare to get a GP appointment, you know, they're hoping to scale up very considerably.
Great. Well, I'll have a look at that myself. Okay, just got a couple of questions. We've got Lorenzo. I don't know if you own this one, Gervais. Lorenzo and Ben Sharman. They're both asking about CT Automotive. Do you own that? I think it does sort of like parts, like cup holders and stuff in cars and automotive.
That's right, actually. Yeah, and it came to market. It came to market quite a few years ago now, actually, and we did support it at the time. The share price was quite high at that stage. The share price, you know, with all the uncertainties of COVID and problems and all the rest of it, share price only 24p, so it's come down an awfully long way. But the bottom line is, yes, we still hold it, absolutely. You know, we've always been impressed by the, you know, the quality of their engineered products, the way they put them together. Many of their products are used by in EVs rather than just, you know, traditional cars, and EVs have been taking market share, as you know. So actually, you know, yes, it's grown its sales considerably. So we're looking really at, you know, market cap of only 24 million. But we're talking really about a company which is doing hundreds of millions of turnover, just over 100 million of turnover. It's generating profit. And we are impressed. We continue to be impressed by the management team. Of course, we're now waiting for the recovery. But that's the whole point. You know, it's already back into you know, winning new contracts and all the rest of it. The problems of or COVID have all gone away. And yes, I mean, the valuation, if you believe the PE ratio, it's kind of like, you know, it's less than five. So absolutely, you know, we continue to back that company and are upbeat about it.
Yeah. Okay, got another one actually from Minshulm. He's basically asking about the new company Potters and More, which I think is formerly Creighton's or Crichton's. Did you ever look at that at all? I think this does it do personal products, it contract manufacturing, some of its own brands, and also
to be fair, I haven't looked at it recently. I mean, I remember it coming to market bizarrely years and years and years ago. And I think, you know, I think it's a perfectly good company. To be fair, I haven't seen it, so I probably shouldn't comment too much on what I think about it. But like so many other small caps, the share price has been, you know, dog awful. And actually, this is a company where, you know, it does have a market position. We all have heard of Potters and More. You see it in the windows of some of the pharmaceuticals. It does 50, 60 million of sales. Market cap is only 16 million. You know, it's got a good balance sheet. It's not particularly cash rich, but it's not cash poor either. It hasn't got a lot of debt. So the net effect is actually, you know, if it comes right, boy, will it come right. And so, yes, it's probably one worth looking at. I haven't seen them recently.
Yeah, okay. And then we've got another one. We've got Gleach23. He's asking about Cyan Conode, which I think is basically an RF sort of like devices manufacturer, particularly out in the in India, that allows communications into rural locations, I think.
That's absolutely right. You know, and actually, you know, there's a huge rollout program going in India in terms of, you know, helping people monitor their utility bills better and all the rest of it, you know. So it'll mean that there's less fraud. So, you know, the Prime Minister Modi's actually put a huge program on that. What's been disappointing is, I suppose, often in India, things take longer, you know, there's more bureaucracy and all the rest of it. Very irritating. It's taken an awful long time to get the contracts. And even with the contracts, they've taken a while to be running out. Unfortunately, Cyan Conode, although it's raised money along the way, has agreed to be taken over. So there's a takeover bid out there now. So although, you know, it may have considerable upside recovery, the truth is that the management team have decided that given the uncertainty about the cash flow and when it comes, that actually taking the bid at this stage is the right thing to do.
Okay, good. Well, let's move to different sectors. We'll go to occupational health. Something coming again we never talk about, personal group, which I think does sort of online benefits and insurance, for particularly for sort of like companies with lower income or lower wage sort of people, etc., who need to get sort of sickness insurance and this sort of stuff. Shares, I think, have done pretty well, actually, if I remember rightly. But what's your view?
Yeah, so I mean, this is an interesting business because it's, you know, in a way it's been around for quite a while and the company was doing okay. But a non-executive, Paula Constant, actually, when the chief exec left, decided, put her hand up and said, look, I might be able to do a better job and all the rest of it. And she moved into role just under 3 years ago now, actually. The share price was, 170 or something like at the time. It's now 370, right? So given that small caps haven't moved, right, that is very impressive. So this is about management excellence. Yes, the products themselves, you know, they actually deliver value. You know, if you're a breadwinner and your partner isn't working and you do get ill and you're in hospital for, you know, 3 weeks or four, you know, whatever, because you've had an accident or illness or something, then actually just making sure that your partner continues to get cash, even when you're maybe not working or you don't get your full pay, makes all the difference. So these are things which are very valuable to the customers. But much more importantly, she's extended, you know, the number of employees covered by the system. She's increased the number of employees who want the system. She's added new customers and new areas. She's brought in some new insurance products. Her digital offering has improved. I mean, as I say, coming back to it, it's about management excellence. A management team, Paula in this case, who's come in, and the business was already had good foundations, and she's built on those and greatly enhanced the growth of it and the cash generation profits of it. And it's that feature which has been driving its share price. Still yields 6.6, just so you know, right? You know, moved up from 170 to 370, yielding 6.6, right? Absolutely extraordinary. Again, good man, you know, very strong balance sheet as previously. Lots of momentum in the business. Yes, I mean, obviously terrific and still only a market cap of just over 100 million. So still below the radar for many of the more active managers in the sector.
Yeah, I did see a stat, I don't know if it's right, but they cover about a million employees. And I was just looking at the turnover, which is about 54 million. This is good. This is good economic product, basically. 54 quid, basically, for insurance to give you sort of health insurance or sickness insurance for the year. I mean, it's not exactly expensive. I mean, you can only buy a couple of pints down flipping, you know, in London at that price. Great value.
Well, I don't quite know where you go, Paul, for your pints. They're not quite that bad where I am.
But really good. Okay, let's move sectors. Let's go to the software. We've got BuildTech software specialist Elico. They came out with prelims a couple of weeks ago, which were pretty strong. They had like-for-like revenue growth in the second half of over 10% iCash. What sort of caught your eye here?
Well, we all know software, you know, it's been an area where, you know, there's been real momentum and lots of the companies which have managed to not just produce software but sell it over a greater number of customers have seen real momentum, and the actual marginal cost of printing the extra software or delivering the extra software is very marginal. So these companies have been very cash generative. They've grown very fast. Valuations have been very high. Of course, that's not quite the same for small caps. Small caps have been overlooked. So Elico is one of the smaller end of the market. But coming back to what we like about it, is that most particularly it continues to be management excellence. So it's had to slightly move its business around. It's had to make a disposal in one case. It's brought in another business. But most particularly, its sense of purpose, its customer service levels, its motivation internally, its Great Place to Work award, which it continues to win year after year. It's a profitable business, and even through the remodeling has remained very profitable, cash generative. And most particularly, it's to do with built environments. So, you know, you need to digitize the built environment. It doesn't just help you in terms of designing new product, in extensions or whatever. It helps particularly in planning ahead. And that's where their software is being used. So this is a combination of software with physical assets, large physical assets, it's going to be very difficult, in our view, for AI to move into this sector and outpace them. And for that reason, we continue to support the company. The share price hasn't gone anywhere, as you know, with the whole sector's been under a bit of a cloud. But the key issue is the company continues to deliver good customer wins. It generates increasing annual recurring revenue. And most particularly with the range of products it's got now, it could considerably grow in future. I mean, it's got only a minor position in the US, for example, which could be much, much larger going forward. So the net effect is it's a company which, net cash, 116 million market cap. It's only 1% yield, but it does produce a yield. And as I say, we think like this, and actually the next one you're going to talk about, which is Beeks.
Yeah.
They're both about management excellence and about the ability to steer a company, not just to continue to succeed, but actually have options where they might succeed very considerably.
Yeah. The only downside, I know you don't like M&A, but it's been in the crosshairs, I think, Alico has, of a lot of its bigger rivals. So I think over the years, Bentley Systems in the States has shown an interest. Oracle, through its RIB software, has also shown interest. And you've got Autodesk as well. And this is high retention, so you can't win these customers. You have to buy them. And so consequently, it trades at a multiple of about just over 2x sales, and these other guys trade at 6+ sales. So it's a huge benefit arbitrage. But anyway, okay,
Just on that point, Paul. I mean, when I meet companies, with Martin and I meet companies, the one thing we do say is, please don't get taken over, right? Please do not get taken over, right? If you do, get an approach, fine. Tell them thank you very much, and tell them that actually it's not for sale and it's the wrong price and all that kind of stuff. But it's basically, don't tell anyone, because once you've told people, the danger is that it's only a question of the right price, and so they might get. The first offer might be 50% premium. We might get 60% or 70%. No. The company's trying to buy it because they think there's 5x upside. Right? Yeah. Jump in the lake, mate. We want to actually carry on holding these companies because of that potential upside.
No, it's very wise words, because I think I've held Alico for some time, and I remember Bentley Systems having a sniff around, and probably, and I was guessing because I don't know, but about 50p, this is, a long time ago. And the shares, as you say, they're cheap, but they're at 130. So, you're right.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move to Beeks. You mentioned it. These guys do the software and infrastructure to help sort of fund managers and exchanges offer high-speed trading for securities in the markets, etc. It's been had a softer first half, and then it's got a stronger H2. How do you see this one moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, the share price has been held back a bit. I mean, yes, you say momentum in the software side hasn't been quite as strong. Not a problem. I mean, in terms of its customer wins, it's winning dramatically. The Exchange Cloud particularly, I mean, it's not really so much for users. It's really for the exchanges that their software is being used. And they, at one stage, they were going to supply NASDAQ, and that didn't come to anything. And that was nothing to do with the quality of their product or anything, but something to do with company-specific reasons why internally it couldn't be done. But anyway, don't worry about that. The point is that the company continues to win massive scale. If you go back to Johannesburg, which is one of their first Exchange Cloud rollouts, as people found that they were able to trade more often because it improves the latency of the trading systems, then effectively you got more turnover. And if you got more turnover, you needed more cabinets, more software. And so they've had to upgrade the Johannesburg Stock Exchange twice since they put it in, right? And so as it starts to move into many of the other global commodity markets, as it moves into other exchanges of all kinds, we think that it's got a very considerable future from here. Sure, the momentum isn't quite so strong. The upfront revenues on some contracts are slightly behind. So what, to be honest? This is a company with net cash, as usual, market cap 140 million. The opportunity in terms of order book to generate some very considerable sales growth in the next few years. We absolutely, in its combination of hardware and software, think it's very much not to be competed by AI, clearly a bit under cloud because of the whole worry about the software sector. But we continue to be very upbeat about the company, irrespective of the fact that, as I say, some of the front revenues on some contracts have been slightly slower than expected in this first half of the year.
Yeah, I saw its last ARR, so I think it was about £34 million. And then I'm just looking at the forecast sales of 40. So it's got recurring revenues of over 70%, hasn't it? So it's great visibility.
Absolutely. No, I agree. And you know, I think, again, you know, as you say, coming back to takeovers, I mean, the whole point is that, you know, we don't want these companies taken over unless they go for a ridiculous price. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to another tech, but more hardware. We've got Concurrent Technologies. And I know it's another famous shareholder, Lord John Lee, I think, likes these guys. They've benefited because they do robust sort of boards and computing boards and devices and stuff which go into defense and aerospace, and the shares have done very well, obviously. How is this one to run? Is it the winner to run?
Yes, I mean, we've got, you know, very considerable holding. We have taken some profits just because it's gone up so much, but that's not because we don't think it's an excellent company. But coming back to it, the key about it is it's not easy to get defense exposure in the UK market. You know, about 4 years ago now, Dr. Miles Adcock came and joined the company. And previously, it was run by an owner operator kind of thing. And although he did a good job, he never quite got the full advantage of the opportunity. Miles has actually done a terrific job of really tightening the whole business up, bringing product to market, at the right time. Getting ongoing sales, and the product, if when you bring some of these single board computers to the market, then thereafter, you know, you don't just get the initial orders, but thereafter, every time, you know, somebody's a sort of broken one, they have to replace it and all the rest of it. So there's a long tail of spares afterwards. Now, just remind you that, you know, when it comes to Intel, you know, it's now recovering, but specifically for many years, Intel only spoke to three companies about its very long-term forecasts about its products coming to market. And Concurrent was one of those companies. That just shows the quality of its marketplace. So they wanted to tell Concurrent so Concurrent could design it in. So come the new launch of a chip, which they can't tell their competitors about, they don't want to tell their competitors about, they only tell one or two companies about. Concurrent had a defense product ready to go on the day that the new chips were announced. So coming back to it, I mean, I think that just says something for the scale of the quality of the market position. Now, with defence sector, with ongoing expenditure going forward, with, you know, the certainty of you know, their long-term order book, because, you know, once it's inbuilt, you know, I think all of that just gives you a great long-term prospect. Market cap's 220 million market cap now, so it's come up an awfully long way. But as I say, very difficult to get companies like this with you know, global market positions in the defence sector. Bizarrely, it doesn't sell much to the UK, bizarrely. Even though it's based in the UK, it sells much more to the US and other places. Extraordinary.
Yeah. Well, the US DOD has certainly been active, hasn't it? It could probably continue to be. So I'm sure they'll have full order books for many years.
I'm not sure it is DOD, actually, Paul. I think it might be DOW now, isn't it?
Oh, of course, yes, it is. Yeah, Trump's a lord to himself, isn't it? Okay, yeah, it's Hesketh, isn't it? DOW. Okay, let's move. Yeah. Let's stay in the semiconductor space. Let's go to Ensilica. These guys do sort of like the design chips, purpose bespoke chips for people to put into products. They've just signed some really quite very exciting space contracts for chips to go into terminals and into, I think it's payloads on satellites. I just can't believe how well the shares have done. You must be very happy. Anyway, how do you see it going forward?
Yeah, so just remind ourselves, it's application-specific integrated circuits, so ASIC boards. So these are more efficient than just using standard product, have certain aspects about their board which are very specific to their application. But most particularly, the whole point about this company is that it's kind of difficult to get into the industry, because if you get an order for a new board, you need to design the board. And although the company which is ordering the board is happy to give you some money, basically you have to put your own cash in as well. So there's cash flow negative in the early stages when you take on the new contracts. And then when you start delivering the board from TSMC and all the rest of it, at that stage, you start to actually make plenty of money. But of course, by then, the costs are low. So you know, the margin on that is excellent. So the problem that the company has been is they've been taking on loads of new contracts. But if anything, that's cash flow negative early on. And that's held back the share price, I think, from the launch of the company. They've got tremendous strength of staff. I like the person, you know, what I've seen of the culture. I think it's really very strong culture, very good at, you know, their technical leadership and the rest of it. As I say, when it comes to the Taiwan Semiconductor Company, they have a direct relationship with them now. It wasn't direct originally, but it is now. Most particularly, this is a very capital intensive sector. And so what we've seen with this semiconductor cycle, the SOX index in the US, is that actually, you know, if you need them for AI or if you need them for other products, basically people say, no, 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 I don't mind what the price is. I just need them right now. And so you've seen this completely extraordinary cycle. As I say, if you look at the SOX index since the start of the Iranian war, I'm only talking about a month and a half ago, then it's up 68 or something percent already. So coming back to it, what's interesting about this company is that it is a market leader in its own area. It is in the hardware sector, it's design of hardware. But most particularly, you know, until recently, you know, its share price was about 50p. And so when it came to raising new capital, and we encouraged them to raise new capital because we didn't want them to take debt on. So, you know, they raised 10 million at 49p only a few weeks ago now, right? And as suddenly people around the world have suddenly said, what else is in the hardware sector? They've alighted upon Insilica, like they have with IQE and a few other companies. Yeah. And suddenly these share prices have gone completely ballistic. So actually, clearly, that's been helped by the satellite order, which is great. And that will mean more cash in to get more revenue in future. But specifically, as I say, I think it's got a global technology basis. I think the cash flow from those early contracts will come through substantially. They've got an increasing number of customers, a very strong balance sheet. And although the market caps come up a little bit now, you know, I mean, many of these, you know, God knows where they're going to go in terms of share prices, judging by what's happening in some of the other SOX index companies. You know, there's just kind of crazy momentum in the whole sector, isn't there, really?
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, just to get, you know, to sort of like agree with that, I mean, the market cap, even at an all-time high now for Insilica, is just over 140 million. But the investment trust in the UK, Seraphim Space Investment Trust, just raised, I think it was 165 million, which they frankly have said themselves, they want to deploy very quickly at an accelerated pace. There aren't many space related places you can put money into, and I would be stunned if some of that doesn't go into Insilica, because you know they need to deploy it basically.
Okay, yeah, and I think this really, before you go on, I was just going to say, I think this underlines the value of being listed. In that, you know, okay, the valuation wasn't all what they wanted. They raised money at 49p. They probably wished the share price was higher at the time, but the bottom line was that, you know, they are cash flow negative. They do need to invest in the business early on. And the whole point is that they could get capital irrespective. They raised money. In fact, the Iranian conflict had just begun by them. But the point was they got the capital. In fact, they got a little bit more than they expected, which is brilliant. And that means the company is in a stronger market position. It didn't have to take on expensive debt along the way.
Okay, good. Let's move to industrials. We've got Zope Foams. Basically does sort of like specialist foams that go into aerospace, automotive, industrial, but also goes into insoles for Nike running shoes, which I think has done pretty well. They've branched out to a new manufacturing facility. I think it's a bit of a joint venture in Vietnam. And they recently bought a business, I think it was in Spain, to do specialist. Again, how do you see this one going forward?
Well, I think we're going to talk about a number of companies which are in themselves very capital intensive. What do I mean by that? It costs an awful lot of money to set up the factory, right? And the nature of it is, if it costs an awful lot of money to set up the factory, then the cost of capital, if it moves up, and you know, bond yields have been moving up over the last 3 years, then actually, you know, when you're putting up a new company facility, you've got to think about the cost of capital, and the cost of capital has gone up, which means you need to actually, you know, make even more profit to justify building the factory. On top of that, of course, the cost of inflation has meant that interest rates gone up as well. So if you are doing partly by capital, partly by interest rates, then they've got more expensive. And then, of course, it's not so easy to borrow as much as you did previously. You need more capital. And on top of that, you still need the cash payback on all of that in future. So coming back to the key issue is, I think there's an awful lot of capital intensive industries which I think are going to find that actually not only are they in the right place at the right time, I think, you know, Zope Foams is going to be one of those, but more importantly, in when they succeed, if people want not just the current production but extra volumes, right, prices of those products are going to have to go up considerably before it justifies ever building any more capacity. And I don't think it's just true of manufacturing plants like this or kind of, you know, property companies, you know, office buildings and that kind of stuff. I think it's going to apply right the way through to, you know, mining companies, energy companies, complicated financials, capital intensive. So I think the UK is a real beacon, actually, for capital intensive businesses. Some small caps, mainly big caps, but most particularly as we see that now, we've seen really a terrific turnaround in this company. The previous chief exec has done a perfectly good job, but Ronan Cox, the new CEO, has done a much, much stronger job. And they've refined the focus on a customer. They've identified going to customer as a tighter focus for the business. They've reorganized the kind of divisions of the company. But most particularly, the core issue is it's capital intensive. Now, right now, we just don't quite know what's going to happen about petrochemical inflation. Clearly, they use an awful lot of, sort of resin, polystyrene, PVC resin to make their products, which are then, and nylon, all the rest of it. God knows about not just the cost of supply, but the ability to get supply. It's probably going to be fine. We just don't know. But most particularly, the quality of the company, all the investments gone in the past, the technology and the scale of their CapEx means that actually, when this, if there is ongoing demand for this product, and I think there will be not just ongoing demand, but improved demand going forward as we manufacture more product at home and need companies to do that, then effectively it's terrifically strong. And as I say, for us, really, the extra upside came from the appointment of Ronan Cox as CEO.
Yeah. You raise a really good point in terms of the input costs, given what the Iranian war is, particularly on petrochemicals. Do you know whether they hedge that forward so they've got they can offset the increased cost, because they probably have contracts 6 months, 12 months, which they need to then reprice when they come up? I was just wondering whether there'll be any, if
they do
any hedging.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, okay. Is the answer. But most particularly, even if they're hedged, and it was interesting, Ryanair, John O'Leary was going on about this. He was saying he was hedged in his air jet fuel deliveries, but he wasn't too sure, even with a hedge, he was going to get deliveries, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, he's right.
So you can make money off the hedging. It's the ability to get deliveries. Thank you very much,
Yeah. Yeah, no, jet fuel could be pretty short this summer. So we're going on holiday to Austria in August with Lufthansa, I think, are right in the middle of this. So we're expecting to be sort of bumped off and go somewhere else or whatever. But anyway, let's see how that goes. Let's move to another.
I think Lufthansa cancelled, was it 150,000 flights or something? It was some enormous number,
It was 20,000, yeah.
20,000, I mean, crazy. Yeah,
that's 20,000 for the next 3 weeks, I think. They haven't started cancelling ones for August. So you're right. But it was only, I think it's only about.
I mean, the whole point about EU is though you'll be you'll be put on another plane or they'll put you in a hotel or whatever, so you're safe as houses in terms of your ticket.
Yeah, well, hopefully. Okay, let's move to another one we've never talked about. I think is it Atomi Energy or Atom? It basically is a low carbon.
Yes, I've always called it Atomi, but actually I saw the management team not so long ago and they told me it was Atome. So I
would Atome. Okay, yeah. These guys are basically building a new fertilizer plant. I think it's in South America, which is powered by hydroelectric energy and therefore is green and therefore it'll be low carbon fertilizer. And given you can't get any fertilizer at all out the Gulf at the moment, this has got to be the right place at the right time. What do you see? How do you see it anyway?
I mean, let's just remind ourselves, this company's been 30 million for as long as I can remember. It's gone up a bit now because they've raised some capital. But the point is, tiny. And yet, it was very leading. It went to the Paraguay nation, and they've got a dam there which they supply electricity to Brazil on a relatively low price. And they said, why don't you convert that into something more added value at the dam? It's the Violeta project. And they put together a 665 million project to build this, fertilizer plant based upon green energy, so it's low carbon, in Paraguay, a 145 million megawatt scale, and it's world leading. And it's taken them years and years, 3 or 4 years to get the whole thing together. They've got to get, all this money together, all the debt together, and the equity supports from on the project, not on the share price, but in the equity of the project. As I say, 665 million. And the company itself is only 30 million market cap. Extraordinary, right? And it's in charge of everything. It's kind of amazing. And now, of course, it's gone across the line. It's achieved, FID. And that's massive. So we can now be confident that in 2028, it'll come into production. Now, where the fertilizer price will be at that stage, God knows. The whole point about where we are now is the range of outcomes is extraordinarily wide. It could be prices of oil that goes down through the floor because, suddenly supply from Iran and Venezuela kind of overwhelms the market. Or it could be that, there's a real shortage of energy prices for the next 3 years and, energy price goes to 150. We don't know, right? What we do know is that actually you're going to need fertilizer, irrespective. And most particularly, it's very close to many customers. There's a lot of, there's a lot of big farms in South America, which they will be using. And it's an attractive, it's because the cost of this energy is comes from a hydroelectric dam. It's all, they know what the price is. So basically, it's going to be very competitive. They'll get a premium because it's green, it has low carbon characteristics, but they'll also get lots of customers because they just want to buy energy. They want to buy fertilizer, and many of the other fertilizer suppliers, particularly in those in the Gulf at the moment, aren't able to supply. So, there's extraordinary opportunities. So, its share price has come up a bit. It's 61 now. But most particularly, there was just a new broker there recently giving a target price of 140p. Now, that's great. And I'd love to see it move up to 140p. But that's just the start. This company's 30 million, now 45 million market cap after the raising the money. Extraordinary. I mean, so this is the nature of really what you have in the UK market is many companies which are literally, in market cap terms, too small for many professional investors to want to consider them. And then as they get bigger, then, of course, the professional investors say, well, this is amazing and all this opportunity. And you get this kind of follow through as many of the major investors start to get involved later on. And that's really what drives many of these share prices to, to generate a return of multiples of the original share price.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, if there's still a risk premium associated with the Gulf, which is pretty, you'd put a lot of money on that going forward, then given I think the Gulf produces 25%, I think, of all the urea of, for fertilizers in the world. And you take that offline, then anyway, well, let's wait and see. But yeah, no, I can understand why you're like that. Let's move.
And go on. So I was just going to talk about that and just talk about behavior change. So, in the past, people have had just-in-time deliveries and it's all fine. I think they're not going to have just-in-time deliveries in the future. And there's going to be all sorts of hoarding of urea or whatever it is, right? So we haven't just got to refill the urea kind of supply mechanism across the world. But everyone say, well, now I'm going to have, 6 weeks extra supply just because I don't want to be cut off and all that kind of stuff. Jesus Christ, there's all sorts of stuff to come.
Yeah. No, I agree. Okay, let's move to SRT Marine, which basically is a specialist in sort of like coastal radar systems that help governments and the Coast Guard basically monitor and ship traffic and boat traffic around their coastlines, maybe to stop sort of drug smuggling or sort of like for defense purposes. But they've done some really big contracts out in Asia, I think it is. Yeah. Is the business now positioned to really sort of get its mojo?
Well, absolutely. And let's just remind ourselves again, this is one of those companies which was 50 or 60 million market cap for years and years and years. And Simon Tucker's kept it going and raised capital along the way and all the rest of it. But the main thing about it more recently is that it hasn't just got major contracts. It has got major contracts all about monitoring shipping, knowing what they are, knowing where they're going. But actually, there's now a defense overlay with all of that as well, which wasn't envisaged 3 or 4 years ago when many of these products were introduced. So they've got not just the sovereign partnerships and the existing national relationships, which will lead to further rollouts, but actually new national relationships and new rollout potential. The management team talk about $1 billion of potential sales to come through, and theoretically, there's more to come behind that. So the market cap has moved up hard, let's be honest. It's 247 million market cap now, but most particularly, if anything, the Gulf uncertainties amplify the upside optionality of this company. And we think that's something which is going to be very good. I think you were struggling to put the share price in there, but the point is the share price is now 90p, having been like 10 and 20p in the past. So it really has come up an awfully long way.
Yeah, good. Okay,
but we're still very upbeat. We love the scale of the opportunity from here.
Yeah. Okay, let's switch gears to monitoring of washing machines and photo. But this company, Me Group, is an expert in all things sort of vending machines. I think the photo booth business is sort of like slower growth, but your washing machine business remote washing machines do really, really well. Again, what's the outlook for this business?
Yeah, I think of course they are remote washing machines, but that's not the main issue. The main issue is that they're larger washing machines than we all have at home. So the idea is you put them into the car park of, say, a supermarket. And then if you happen to have a Airbnb unit and you need to take out all the sheets and perhaps do the duvet, then you can put it all into the Revolution machine, which is produced by Me Group, then obviously you turn it on, it goes off, does the washing and drying for you. You go off for 40 minutes, buy a whole lot of extra soap or whatever you need for your guests and perhaps some food. And then you go come back to your car, take the stuff out of the washing machine, put it in the car and go and put it on the bed, ready for the new customer to come in. So coming back to it, it is a sort of side, you know, a side benefit of the rollout of Airbnb, to be honest. And, you know, clearly they've got an established universe of you know, machines already operating. And each year they're used a bit more and the price go up and all the rest of it. So that's the core operation. But most particularly, they've also got all sorts of supermarkets saying to them, actually, why wouldn't you put one in our car park? Because once you put one in, people can come and bring their own duvets and then they can go into the shop. So they've just done a deal with Asda, for example, to roll out in Asda. So most particularly, there's very considerable growth in these revolutionary, they're called revolution washing machines. So clearly they've got to be monitored. They do have a national network, not just in the UK, you know, they're across Europe, US. Sorry, not US. They're in Europe and Ireland. You know, they've got and many of these machines. Once you get the you know, population machines out there, even when you don't need any more machines, you just get a fantastic cash flow. It's just beautiful. So the nature of it is, you know, the photo me kind of, you know, sort of passport photos, yes, less important than it was, still generate some cash, but not very important. Some of the vending products, yes, could be useful, but not really. The thing is the revolutionary wash aspect, which we think is going to continue to roll out fast. It's going to be very cash generative when it does roll out. And once they've got the market position, no one else is going to come and put another washing machine next to the existing washing machines. So they dominate the market from there.
Yeah. Have you tried out the washing machines, the revolution ones? It's sort of like done your weekly.
I haven't actually. I don't have an Airbnb unit. But what is interesting about the shares, and you know, it's been bid for and seen bids often, is its current free cash flow yield, the generation of cash on its assets and market cap, is between 18% and 20% according to forecasts. What? Right. You know, this is a company with net cash balances yielding 6.7. Wow, this is just ridiculous. Some of these valuations are criminal, really.
Yeah. Good. Okay, well, let's switch gears. Let's go to retail payments and e-commerce. PayPoint owns terminals in sort of like convenience stores and petrol stations, allows people to pay their bills, plus collect and deposit parcels for e-commerce. And I think it also owns Love to Shop, which is basically, I think it's a voucher, sort of like gift voucher type business, and also the hamper business. And so quite a collection of different activities. Again, in the round, what's the sort of the outlook for this business?
Well, the key really is that it operates terminals in many corner shops. That's the core. And it puts more product through, works with the government for payments, perhaps, opportunities to redeem vouchers, utility bills, all that kind of thing. So it's that core population of corner shops with their machines in, which is the key to the business. And that means that, therefore, they can then start to get more sophisticated and offer their technology to other companies. They're offering their technology to some financial companies in New Zealand, for example. So the core business, very stable. Really, they've done a great job. Good customer service, extra. But most particularly, you know, there have been share prices that have been held back. It hasn't had the momentum expected earlier this year. The share price came back on the back of that. You know, not a problem. You know, it's got a strong balance sheet. It's quite a decent sized company, 370 million market cap. But most particularly, there's been a worry about a court settlement, which is just settled. It cost them $169,000, nothing to worry about. But most particularly, the locker rollout, because clearly you can not just have the machines, but you can have some lockers outside where, you know, if you want to collect a parcel, you don't have to be in waiting for it. It can be dropped off at the local corner shop. That hasn't necessarily expanded as fast as they wanted. But it doesn't matter. The point is, this company has a strong balance sheet, has a really nice yield, 9%. 9% yield? What? Growing, and on top of that, you know, it's free cash flow yield. The cash generation on the business is already rising. It's already at 10% or 9% at the moment, but it's forecast to rise to 19%. You know, again, these are very strong financial positions in a world of uncertainty where you can say, well, on average, most of these companies are going to be just fine and maybe much better than fine on top of that. And so it just underlines just how inexpensive, really, a lot of the UK quoted companies are, and specifically many of the smaller microcaps, which we argue are just wrongly priced, to be honest. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you've got another one here. We've got basically, which looks, which has done very well for you. We've got ACG Metals, which I think is currently bit of a small gold miner in Turkey, but the mine is being converted to do copper and to zinc. And I think I've got the chart right. The price has increased fourfold in 12 months. So you've done pretty well again here.
Yes, the main thing about it is it's in construction. So the copper mine isn't in production yet. It's going to be in production. It is a mix of copper and gold. The surface, the surface area they need to clear before they get into the mine actually has got a lot of oxides, and a lot of those oxides are gold. So they've been clearing the surface mine area, and they've actually generated a lot of gold, and the gold price gone crazy. So they've generated a lot more cash on the gold than they ever thought they were going to do. And there's a bit of copper in there as well, but mainly the gold has been very helpful. And so the actual cost of building the mine expected to be much, much more indebted than they are now, because they've been selling this gold at crazy prices and actually offsetting the cost of building the mine. So it does have debt, but very little, much less than you might expect it. It is coming into production. It's going to produce a lot of copper in the first 3 years. Again, coming back to what I was talking about, capital intensive earlier on, you know, if you want to set up a new copper mine, and if there is more demand because of AI or because of renewed EV demand after, you know, the problems with the oil price and such like, then actually it takes an awfully long time to bring a copper mine in production. So this is one of the largest in Europe. It's in Turkey. I think the management team are, again, very, you know, very organized, very careful about expectations. You know, they're careful not to let expectations get too high, but on the other hand, keep exceeding expectations because of that. And now we come into production with, you know, copper price being strong, it's unlikely many new copper mines are going to be opened in any meaningful amount in the next couple of years. So, you know, it comes into the cash flow generation as the new mine is opened later this year. The large part of the generation of cash will be from copper, but they still get a gold credit alongside. And clearly gold price has peaked out a bit, but it's still going to be a very substantial gold credit on the side. So it's the cash payback, you know, millions and millions of pounds of cash payback, having invested at the right time in a mine which could be very considerable for a very long time. So cash flow characteristics are, in our view, beautiful.
Yeah, and copper, like tungsten, is a strategic metal, isn't it? I mean, it's so important to sovereign ownership to be able to do, in copper's purpose, all the data centers, all the AI, all the EVs and this sort of stuff. If you haven't got enough copper, then you can't build that new technology. So I think you're right. Okay, good. Let's move sectors. Go to consumer tech. An IPO about 12 months ago, the Beauty Tech Group developed sort of like cosmetic skin treatments, face masks and stuff, but also I think does laser treatment to remove hair and stuff like this. Shares have done very well. They had a secondary placing just recently, but again, it's still doing well. How do you see this one going forward?
So it's interesting when it came to market. I mean, you know, the market can, you know, it's you know, not a bad size, about 350 million market cap, but most particularly, you know, the market can be a bit churlish. You know, it looks a bit sort of, you know, as though it's got a fad and the fad will come through and all the rest of it. But actually, many of the products which they have introduced, I think are probably products which might last a longer time. Many of them are more devices. It's not like putting a cream on your face. You know, you're actually putting a kind of mask on which shines a certain kind of light on your face, which helps your skin younger and more supple and all the rest of it. But as you say, they've moved into laser hair and all the rest of it. So they've probably got four major product lines. Most of them are not even assumed to come into market or generate profits very early on, so we just don't know, but they've been very conservative. What we have seen, and they've only been quoted really for less than a year, is that actually we've seen four upgrades already. So that's kind of impressive, really. Often when you come into market, you kind of show as much as you can in the shop window because you want to get a fair valuation. If anything, they held it back. So I think that's very good. Specifically, you know, the company's likely to be cash generative going forward. Of course, they raised some capital, but the cash generation of the business is already coming through. If they get lucky on any one of those four product ranges, they could sell very considerably more. You know, there is a chance that these kind of products, they're not quite go viral, but they could become global in their footprint because they have the technology and the claims which they've you know, done themselves. So effectively, the nature of it is that it's got this option value upside. And as I say, many of the products, really, people are making no assumptions about what they're going to be selling. When we find out and when they do sell, hopefully lots, but if they sell an awful lot, then again this share price could considerably rise further. So it's not as cheap as some of the other companies we've talked about, but it's got probably more option value than many of the others we were talking about.
Yeah, and it's building that brand, isn't it, as well? So that, which is absolutely important, international. Okay, let's move to the
slightly. Also, I mean, it could generate so much cash, it could start paying dividends, actually. You know, I mean, who's to say, right? You know, it's only just come to market, but it could be so cash generative within a year or two, generating lots of cash. And that's really the cornerstone, what we said. That many of our holdings, they're not just attractive companies. They're not just the winners, you know, which are going to win disproportionately as the losers lose. But most particularly, they're going to generate cash as a demonstration of the quality of their market position. And that's the key, ultimately. Even if markets are unsettled, if there's a global recession on, or something's awful's happened in terms of conflict, if you are generating surplus cash, you absolutely have the pound seats going forward.
Yeah. Let's move to a sort of maybe a potential unbundling. I don't know. Light Science Technology recently did a placing at 1p to raise six and a half million, I think, pounds to buy an acquisition, Injector Cloud, I think it's called. But they've got three divisions. They do contract electronic manufacturing, the cladding repair sort of systems, plus they do ag tech, which helps sort of growers do farming with light, etc. What sort of like piqued your interest here?
Well, the whole point is, I mean, the core business is fine, and you know, it's contract led, which is fine, and all the rest of it. They're doing pretty well, but they were already injecting Injector Clad in. You know, they had a business which did that, and then Injector Clad itself, the actual product company itself, came up for acquisition, and they wanted to buy it. And in fact, you know, it was a difficult time because small caps and Iran and all the rest of it meant that actually, for whatever reason, they could only raise money to pound. Sorry, a penny. You know, it was fairly dilutive to the existing shareholders, but it's got more upside potential as a result of that, I would argue. So the Injector Clad business is around the outside of many of the major tower blocks which have been built, you know, for homes over recent years. Is actually there's a gap between the wall and the edge of the concrete sort of floor. You know, in order to make sure that fires can't get up through that gap, the government's instructed that all of those buildings get some kind of barrier fitted. An ejector clad is one of those barriers. They put in a kind of sock, and then they put in a lot of intumescent product. Intumescent means that when it gets hot, it expands.
Yeah.
And so effectively stops the fire expanding. So we think there's great opportunity. There's a huge order book, right, to happen. You know, a lot of the, housing companies and things are having to put retrofit some of the existing tower blocks and all the rest of it. So one, we think the product itself is very successful. They've already demonstrated that it's successful by delivering, you know, their own installations. But most particularly with the master, you know, franchise, effectively, they can now inject. You know, they can do that. So we think there's very considerable order book coming from here. That's what got us involved. Effectively, it's doing a product. You know, over the next 3 or 5 years, it could be very considerable. Company's tiny at the moment; it's only 22 million market cap, having raised six. It's backed by sort of various publications of already, and most particularly, if it does succeed, and this is, you know, cornerstone of all of our holdings, really, it will be reflected not just in sales and profit growth, but considerable cash generation. Again. You know, so yes, absolutely. We absolutely back them in this. It's not a great name, is it, really? But in a way, it's misleading a little bit because it's not really about light or science. It's more about, you know, this Injector Cloud business. But anyway, it's a pretty exciting story as far as we're concerned.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they should unbundle and call themselves Injector Cloud, which would be a bit easier as a sort of like a one story. Did Premier Miton participate in that placing then at 1p? Was that the?
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay, I mean, well, you know, in quite a number of these companies, you know, things like Insilica and stuff, I mean, we've been the cornerstone. Effectively, we said, right, if you raise capital, we'll put in, you know, a decent amount to get you started. And then, you know, going around some of the other private investors, some of the smaller investors, they've actually raised the rest of the capital. Because a lot of these companies, you know, a lot of the mainstream institutional, even the mainstream institutional small cap fund managers aren't going to look at some of these companies at this stage.
Yeah. No, thank God so you're there,
thank God I am here from the point of view of my clients, right? You know, we've had a great start to the year on the fund and all the rest of it. But more importantly, you know, if we do get this kind of pattern change where it isn't just about this narrow group of technology stocks, but moves, you know, into small companies and novel companies and companies which aren't affected by world events because they're in a local market like science, then effectively, you know, it's the ability not just to make money, but to make disproportionate money at a time when others perhaps are not doing so. That is the key driver. And that's what I think is going to happen to small caps. I think the UK small cap sector, it hasn't really started yet. It's made some good money, but it hasn't really started in terms of outperformance. And I think when it does outperform, because it's so tiny, right? You know, there's loads of money swilling around the world going into SOX index, this and that. But actually, if some of it came in just a tiny bit into the small caps, share prices would go electric. And we've just seen a little tiny bit of the, you know, as I say, IQE, InSilica, that kind of thing. We've just seen the lapping of that. If that starts to happen serious scale, then, you know, share prices could really shock people in terms of the appreciation.
Yeah. Well, I hope they do. We've got one final question. Thomas Dean. No, sorry. We've got WC2821. He's asking about it's a company, Endo InsurTech. Do you own that one at all? This just basically puts these devices onto the onto pipes going into houses to be able to remote monitor where they've got a water leak. Yeah.
No, we have been involved in that company. It's one of our larger holdings at one stage, and we did take some profits. To be honest, we didn't take enough profits because actually, more recently, although they've been rolling out the system and all the rest of it, they've identified that they will need more capital probably, and the nightmare with companies which need more capital is that as soon as people realize that, you know, the current share price goes down to nothingness, and that's what's happened in this case. So we did have some until recently, and we have come out. That doesn't mean we think the company won't survive, but when they come and raise capital, we can look at it with a clean pair of eyes. You know, we don't need to support it if we don't think it's going to make a great return. If it is going to make a great return, then we can support it. You know, as active in institutional investors in the smaller end of the market, you know, the best thing we can do for companies is write them a check. And allow them to get the capital. And so when we don't have holdings, that means we're in a strong position. If we've already got a large holding, then we can't sort of have a double-sized large holding. So from that point of view, actually, you know, if it's the right thing to do and we, you know, and the company puts together a great risk-reward ratio going forward, then we can support it. But at the moment, we're out of the company.
Yeah. We've done really well so far, certainly on the companies we've talked about. Just to the final question then, Gervais, what's your sort of favourite stock idea for the, sort of the next 12 months? Maybe one we've talked about or another one in your portfolio?
No, I mean, I mean, obviously it's kind of interesting, you know, often when I meet companies, I think, oh, that's my favourite idea. And then I meet another company, oh, that's my favourite idea. So there are so many favourite ideas at the moment. Yeah. But if you have to pick them individually, I think the some of the mining companies have the not just the upside, but the fortunate position that if, you know, commodity prices remain elevated, they don't just make money. They make, you know, extraordinary amounts of money, you know, Tungsten West, a Devon, you know, miner of tungsten, which might be almost the largest in the world and almost the lowest cost in the world with a net present value on their website with the current price of tungsten and a 40-year life of 1.7 billion and a market cap of 400 million, you know. Now, don't get me wrong. They've got to get their debt across the line. They've got 85 million to raise on that. But the bottom line is, you know, the risk reward ratio of some of these companies, but also, I mean, ACG and all the rest of it, I think they're extraordinary. And so make sure you have enough mining companies in your portfolio.
Brilliant. Okay, well, thanks again, Gervais, for your comments. Thanks, everyone, for your questions, and very much look forward in touching base again in probably about 6 months' time. So thanks, Gervais.
Thank you very much, Paul. I've really appreciated it. Thank you for doing all that work as well. Thank you.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always on television watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.